You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 23 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Gary Boyson, I want to ask him about the vaccine stocks, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna. Then we're chatting with Cygnia, they've got a new global health ETF coming to market. And then talking around shifting township consumer habits with a recent report out from Roger Wilco. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Cyber attack hits Transnet's operations. Freight industry insiders have raised red flags. Absolutely. Cyber attacks are not unique to us, but they are a significant challenge. Business Day, Reserve Bank warns violence wiped out strong recovery. So social unrest will have lasting effect on investor confidence and job creation and keeps lid on growth outlook. The MPC didn't change rates and inflation came in nice and low, so probably no rate increases until well into next year. Morning markets, US is green, S&P up 0.2, NASDAQ up 0.7%. Sydney is green but up just slightly, 0.06%. Tokyo closed for Sports Day, otherwise known as the start of the Olympics. Commodities mixed, gold 1,804, rand a little bit weaker again, 1,471. And top 40 looking to open up about 100 points this morning, that's about 0.15%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Gary Boyson, portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Gary, appreciate your early morning time. The vaccine companies, the listed ones, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, their theory was they're not going to make a lot from the vaccines initially, but now we're talking about booster jabs and the like, potentially like that. Are this some stocks you've had a look at and a preference between them?
Yeah, thanks, Simon. If you look at it, very different prospects. So mm-hmm. The big vaccine stocks, as you mentioned, are really Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, and Moderna at the moment, and very different types of companies. So Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson, some more similar, typically big, you know, blue chip pharmaceuticals. Vaccines are important to them, but not the whole story. Johnson & Johnson, for example, has a significant medical devices business that's actually been set mm-hmm. back by coronavirus because people have been delaying elective surgery. You know, on last year's numbers, that makes up about 30% of the business. But then Moderna, obviously very, very different. So Moderna, you know, very new technology, the mRNA technology coming out, and a much more speculative, much newer company, not a pharmaceutical company with a long track record. And you can see the differences in the share prices. So yeah. while Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson have almost just tracked the S&P 500. You've got Moderna up over the last year, 120% mm-hmm. versus a 13% return in the S&P 500.
Yeah, I mean, so in the healthcare, you mentioned sort of medical devices and the like there. I mean, I've always been a fan of the medical device space. Certainly healthcare is a, you know, notwithstanding a pandemic, we will get through it. So things will return to normal. There is this is a sector, a space with a large amount of growth prospects. Have you been putting healthcare into your offshore portfolios? I'm assuming you must have some exposure there.
No, we do. We've been long-term holders of both Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson. So looking at it, you know, it's always difficult for the companies because they, you're trying to manage, almost the expectations of consumers, especially under the coronavirus, saying that, you're producing life-saving drugs, but at the same time, you want to profit off them, which always kind of creates that little fear. But, looking at them, they're very much blue chip companies. They're actually absolutely core to the way civilization works. At the moment, they're not going anywhere, and they kind of have a much lower risk profile. So, while I don't think you're going to see super normal profits out of them, they aren't particularly expensive if you're looking forward. So, if you're looking at something like Pfizer, on next year's earnings, you're looking at a forward PE out 1 year of only 11 times, which is pretty cheap for what you're getting. Johnson & Johnson a little bit more expensive, so that's looking at about 17 times earnings 1 year out, and both of them pay decent dividend yields. You know, next year we're expecting around 2.4% from Johnson & Johnson, and around 3.8% from Pfizer. So, you know, if you look at the two, we do hold both. But at the moment, if you're a new investor, I would probably be going Pfizer. And it's not just because the metrics are a little bit cheaper, you know, a little bit better dividend yield, but it's also the mRNA technology that Pfizer has access to. You know, it partnered with BioNTech for the coronavirus mm-hmm. vaccine, but as mentioned in the opening, it's all about what's going to happen with the booster shots, which could be potentially more profitable. At the moment, we've seen a big kick up in revenue, but not a subsequent kick up in earnings. That could change in the years to come as we see more and more variants coming out and as these companies are allowed to become a little bit more profitable.
Yeah, and those booster shots, potentially a couple of billion a day, but those valuations are crazy. Pfizer 11 forward, Johnson & Johnson 17 forward. I look at the tech stocks, I look at some of the Netflixes of the world, those are amazingly cheap. Gary Boyson, portfolio manager, Rand Swiss, appreciate your early morning time. We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insight into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider, license number 719.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money.
Chatting now with Eva Majorova. She is head investment consulting at Signia. Eva, appreciate the early morning time. We were chatting there with Gary Boyson around individual stocks in the healthcare space. You're bringing a global healthcare ETF to market. The healthcare space, I mean, you know, we're talking vaccines there, but just healthcare generally has got a very, very strong investment case in terms of an aging population, a richer population, and completely, frankly, ignoring potential vaccines going forward. There is a solid investment case for the sector.
Correct. There really is a solid investment case for the sector. We see, at Signia, we see healthcare almost as a theme that you want to have exposure to in the near future. And as you say, it's not really just about the pandemic. Yes, the pandemic has highlighted the need for healthcare and how mm-hmm. unequal healthcare is around the globe. But there's also so much innovation happening in the healthcare space. You know, we're talking about, you know, 3D printing of organs mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. using virtual reality to simulate training environments. There's artificial intelligence being used in diagnostics. And there's more and more innovation happening in the background. So it's really about wanting to be part of that innovation, wanting to invest early into that whole sector that is just developing in all around the globe.
Now, as you say that, it makes me think of your fourth industrial revolution ETF that you've gotten. And healthcare is probably one of the most innovative spaces out there. I mean, yeah, we've got, you know, billionaires going to space and the like, but in terms of you know, the robotics, the AI that's coming through, the mRNA which we've developed for the pandemic, there's not an overlap necessarily in companies, but in terms of technology and innovation between sort of that the 4IR and healthcare globally.
Yes, correct. I mean, it really brings together the two of, you know, you're bringing, you know, the forward thinking of technology and you're just bringing it to the healthcare space. So the same, I mean, some of these companies are involved in these same type of innovations, mm-hmm. like, you know, your smartphone-connected devices that can now, you know, read all sorts of things. That would be more on the tech side, where the healthcare companies are really focusing on, you know, more tech around, you know, the solutions of how, you know, we can, you know, make healthcare easier, more accurate, and just, you know, forward-thinking.
The ETF you're bringing, it's an offshore, it's a global one, tracking, what, the 150 healthcare companies and focusing on developed markets. This is going to be predominantly Asia, Western Europe, North America.
Correct. So it's 100% exposure to developed markets. It will be the 150 largest, mm-hmm. Most liquid developed market companies. And you know, it's really great for South African investors to be able to gain that outside exposure to global markets without having to worry about exchange control.
Currently in IPO, the IPO starts today, if memory serves, and runs until lunch on Monday.
Correct. And then the official listing date on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange will be Friday, the 6th of August.
6th of August for listing. Do you have an idea of target total expense ratio at this point?
50 basis points.
And then code that will be coming, if my memory serves, it's going to be SYGH, so Signia Health.
Correct.
We'll leave that there. That is Eva Majorova, Head Investment Consulting at Signia, on their healthcare ETF they're bringing for market, an offshore healthcare ETF. IPO running until lunchtime on Monday, so check with your stockbroker, but chat quickly. And then listing 6 August, and 0.5% will be total expense ratio. Share code SYGH when it lists. The chatting there with Eva around healthcare, chatting with Gary Boyson around individual stocks. Is healthcare, particularly global healthcare, a sector into which one you're investing? Is this something which has certainly interested you? You can have a vote and have your comments on our social media. We found that both LinkedIn and Facebook. Answers really a yes, great potential, or no, regulation risk. The potential is absolutely humongous. There is going to be some regulatory risk, and that regulation risk is simple. The process being, you know, healthcare costs have been rising ahead of inflation. Do governments start to crack down? We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insight into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider, license number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Jane and I with Craig Hanabas. He is strategic director at Roger Wilco. Craig, appreciate your early morning time. You just published the 2021 South African Township Marketing Report, which is done with yourself and others. Some fascinating data coming out of there. But the one that stood out to me, and certainly you'd highlighted it in the article I read, is that 80% of respondents are still preferring cash transaction over other payment methods. I'm imagining this is perhaps in part just to do with the banking system and costs associated and the like, but certainly in townships, cash is still very much king.
Morning, Simon. Yes, it is. What was interesting for me was that if you look further down on that list of rankings, sitting at around number 4 is e-wallets. Yeah. Now, that should be a lot higher because e-wallets are safe, they're convenient, everyone's got a cell phone. I think there's a 92% penetration of mobile in this country. So we've got the equipment, but yet it's still sitting at number 4 behind store cards. Now, that tells me there's a low-level paranoia that if your money is invisible, there are invisible eyes on it. And those eyes belong to the government, they belong to financial institutions, and they belong to scammers. So if you don't have your money in your pocket, you can't protect it. So that's the general sort of, I think, mindset in the township. And it's going to get worse with what's happened last week. People are going to get even more paranoid about protecting their money and keeping it on them.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Absolutely, it is that, you know, cash is tangible, whereas, you know, e-wallets, which is a, you know, a great safe way to do it, significantly less tangible. And as you say, who's watching? Who's got control? Is it still there tomorrow? The other key point was spaza shops, which, I mean, spaza shops have been a mainstay of our townships for 40, 50 years, and their popularity is actually starting to decline as we see a rise of sort of the supermarket. Now, imagine, is it perhaps sort of pricing power of the supermarkets? Is it perhaps now that sort of in the last decade or so we've actually seen some malls moving into the townships and offering that opportunity?
Yes, it's the ability of the spaza shop to buy in bulk compared to what a retailer can buy in bulk. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's a massive difference there. Now, there are two issues, and one of them is spot on. It is the price point. But the second issue is stock control. So if you're unable to predict your footfall, and that's where spaza shops are sitting, you might have a great month and then followed by a poor month. Mm-hmm. And you've bought the wrong amount of stock for your shelves, you're going to be sitting with expired goods. And so, you know, and that was actually fine. I mean, the consumer has been quite happy with that up until COVID-19 because you're taking a chance when you go into the spaza shop. Yeah, you might buy something expired. It might be a little bit more expensive, but it's convenient. Yeah. Now, with COVID-19 hitting, it's even more difficult to control stock because there's far less footfall. There's less people buying, so you've got to make up your profit by pushing the prices up, and the consumer's had enough of that. So there's a shift in habit, and people are moving into retail spaces. Now, I don't want to keep bringing up what happened last week, but I think it's still fresh in people's minds. Both retailers and spaza shops were looted indiscriminately. Now, a retailer can pick up the pieces and start again because they have resources to do it. But a spaza shop's money is tied up in the stock in their shelves. Take that stock away, they've got nothing. So the decline of the spaza shop has just accelerated by untold amounts. And it's a problem because they contribute to the township economy. They contribute to our GDP. They contribute to job creation. They contribute to money circulation. So without them, the economic issues are, it's hard to tell what's going to happen, but it's not going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%. I mean, we are keeping going back to last week, but the reality is that, you know, ShopRite, whoever, Boxer, YouSave, they can restock. The spaza can't. That spaza is probably out of business, and they contribute a chunk to GDP. The last point was most trusted sources, and this top of list, friends and family, bottom of the list is sort of in-store SMS and everything, but you make a really, really great line in that report that says, you know, advocacy from friends and families is number one. When you're doing sales, you're talking to a family, you're not talking to an individual.
Absolutely. I think we've made mistakes as marketers by saying, well, look, our target market is the 18 to 24 year old, living here, living there, this is the LSM, whatever, and that's it. And we put all our money behind all the ads and everything to target these people. But the reality is that if granny says that that's a good product, forget what your marketing says.
Yeah.
We're going with what granny says. So it means that you're going to have to start splitting your budgets up and getting very clever with your messaging so you can speak to the older generation so that they can convince the younger generation to buy your product. We're very much a country about heritage brands. So if you're sitting in that space where you've been around for, you know, since the dawn of time, you don't have to spend as much time and effort marketing to that generation because they'll be familiar. Mm. But if you are a fairly new brand, you've got to be absolutely 100% visible to everyone. We had an interesting conversation with a lady who said, if she doesn't see a billboard with your brand on it, she assumes you've gone. That your brand has disappeared and she's not going to buy anymore. So there's that perception that if it's invisible, you don't exist or you're not important or your quality has dropped and nobody likes you.
Yeah, and to sell to that Gen Z, you might actually need to market to the boomer generation, which creates all levels of complexity. Fascinating report. I appreciate the early morning time. Craig Hennebus, Strategic Director, Roger Wilco. That's it for today. Our poll yesterday, we were chatting with Sean Saunders around Bitcoin, still at the sort of around the lows of the year. We were talking altcoins as well. The question we had to you on both our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles was, are you holding or buying? Now, truthfully, about a half of you were just not interested in crypto at all. Of those who were interested, about a quarter of the holders keeping it forever. About a sixth of you are buying more. And where's crypto going next? As Sean said, we have absolutely no idea. What surprised me, little under 10% of you are actually selling and taking your profits, and I hadn't expected that considering that we're already 50% down. You can always have your say. We've got the new poll on healthcare, LinkedIn and Twitter. Have your vote and have your say. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Remember, we are live every weekday morning on the website and the app from MoneyWeb, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Kudora, Eleanor, and Masekhla, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.